Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Message Podcast of Friends Church. My name is Gregory and I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really do hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say a quick thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things that we're able to do is because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to the website, friendschurch.ca, and click the Donate tab. Or better yet, download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy this week's message.
Well, good morning, everyone, and everyone virtually as well. There is some pandemic perks, you know, as we come up and we think about this time of year. Last week when I was at Friends Church, I was in front of my fireplace in my PJs. So if you haven't had that opportunity yet, for those of you who are here, you can expand your repertoire, I guess, as we go forward. And it has been an interesting year. It's been a good year for Friends Church. Like, we've been solid this year in terms of the financial backing, and that's because of each and every one of you. So when we talk about come up, and you'll see Kelty or Vince or Josh or myself, and we're talking about that church, giving, that's each of us contributing to keeping Friends Church going and solid and strong. And it is a really important thing. It's interesting, I was talking to my running partner today, and there was just a couple lessons recently, just some Friends Church messages about, you know, how to hold out hope when things are bleak. And it was just sort of interesting, where else do we talk about these things? There wasn't really a place, unless you guys want to come for a run this morning. You're all welcome. We can run outdoors, just so you know. No, it's. I'm sure those people at home are probably, oh my goodness, Trevor, we'll be texting you. Thank you. Be looking forward for those texts. So thank you, guys. We've kept this ship really going. We have a unique opportunity, and Kelty talked about it last week. This is the time of year we do our staff offering, and that is for our wonderful staff team of Jeff and Carmen and Vince, who really carve out and put their heart into this organization, and it's our way to say thank you. If you just go onto the app, the Pushpal app, there's actually a staff offering, staff bonus, and it's appreciated. I was thinking there was two lessons that really struck with me this year. One was when Jeff talked about it's not as simple ever as us versus them. And that has really helped me navigate COVID because I realize how complicated it is. And there's not necessarily a right answer for everybody, for all circumstances, for all time. And that's been really helpful for me. And then Carmen definitely talked this a lot in Switch, just about how we can give back. One of the pieces that we have your teenagers do when they come into Switch is, hey, write down an act of kindness you did this week. That's a really interesting challenge, because even as leaders, we're like, okay, Trevor, you should put something down. I'm like, an act of kindness I did this week. And it's just taught me to be more deliberate about acts of kindness. So that team, the team here who works so hard on our behalf and really keeps us going and helping us navigate a COVID Christmas, even this type of series, that's what the staff bonus is for. So if you have the ability to give something back to that group, they really appreciate it. And thank you. Have a great morning, guys.
Trevor, also Tara from the kids group in the and we don't see her that much, you know, and she's downstairs. Kids come and then they're not allowed to come. And the rules change and she's trying to balance and juggle all of that and make it work and make it fit. And she just joined in kind of when COVID hit too. So she's, I would imagine, having a bit of a crazy time battling all that. So she's in there on that team. And sometimes we see her up here, but, you know, she's down in the basement doing her thing too. So such a great time of year to think about giving to the people here at Friends. So,
how's that? Good. We got volume? Some would say too much. All right. Thank you again, band, delivering beautiful music. Man, oh man, week after week. Love being in this space. Love listening. I know I talk to many of you that won't miss Sunday mornings because you just, there's something live, something beautiful about being live when that music plays. So before I jump into the message, I want to tell you about the giveaway. I need to send out a huge shout out to our entire community, everyone that's been piping in our messages online, live streaming. Obviously, you've been watching because people are donating, they're signing up, they're calling in, and getting involved in this. We have had a huge outpouring response, and now we've got gift cards left. Gift cards and I think a few families or a few individuals left on that massive list. And I mean, a couple weeks ago, I was like, ooh, do we bite off too much? Even people that couldn't shop, people couldn't even get gift cards. They're saying, I'm giving money. And so they go online, they donate to local water this month, with which we've diverted all monies from local water into the giveaway in December, so which is awesome. In case you still want to be involved, though, let me just walk you through the process. You can go to this website, friendschurch.ca/hampers, hampers S, that's plural. If you go there, it will bring you to a little form. It's a Google form that looks like that, basically asking for your contact info, phone, email, and name. You fill that in and click submit. It will bring you to the link. That's the link right there. You click on that link, and up pops our Google spreadsheet, which is kind of our master list of all the needs. If you scroll down, it's kind of broken into two sections. First is just presents you could buy for an individual. The individual is identified by a number and a letter. You could click on, and all you have to do is you find the line that doesn't have any name beside it, in the far right column, which has yellow highlighted over the top of it. You go down, and if that's one of the needs that you want to respond to, you click on the little radio button. Now, your phone might not do this. We've had people that are saying, I can't make my phone work. Yeah, I'm sorry. Google doesn't play nice with some phones. But anyways, if you go on your laptop, you click on the radio and the radio button, and down will drop a list of all the different names. Your name will be on that list if you filled out the form. All you have to do is click on your name, and it populates that column just like that. Boom. And you're in. Then all you have to do is bring your gift card, your money, whatever it is, to us here at the temple, B'nai Tikva, by this Tuesday, noon. What we're going to do then is we're going to take all these gifts that have been, and we'd ask if you can to pre-wrap them. If you can't, we got wrappers on site. We will make sure that those are wrapped. And I want to give a huge shout out to our wrappers out there. Some of you have taken home, I can't believe how much you've taken home, and you're wrapping and wrapping. You're going to be good and sick of wrapping after this is all done. But they're bringing in the gifts. We're going to be in a great place come Tuesday. So if you've signed up, just a reminder to bring your stuff in, get it to us. I've seen a pile of stuff being brought in this morning, which is so amazing. We're going to lift some families this Christmas, 20 different families. Some families have 8 members. You guys have bitten off this project that could, you really, when you add up the dollar value, we're looking at like almost $20,000 of support that's been brought in. One, we also do these grocery, I just want to brag for a little bit. We do these grocery hampers on top of all the presents. And someone, a woman in our community just said, you know what, I want to raise some funds for that cause. I want to, so that we can buy lots of grocery stuffs for these families. She goes out and presents a check this week, I think for $3,600 or $3,700 that she's raised from clients within her company toward this project. I mean, it is mind-blowing the way that people have given in a difficult time. So let us just celebrate. Let's take a moment to just be proud of this community that believes in making the world a better place. This is what it's all about. So thank you. Thank you. I tell you, I never cease to be amazed by how generous this community is, but this last couple of weeks just has floored me. So thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. And all of you out there. All right. Talking about navigating a COVID Christmas right now. That's the series we're in. I want to talk about a ninja level exercise, a practice that you can do that can help you this season. But let me tell you, first of all, about a little chapter of my life that I had. It's a little difficult. It was, it was about a year and a half ago, I guess. A little over a year and a half ago, I was playing ball hockey and took a deflected slap shot straight to the eye, just right around the eye socket. And wound me up in the hospital. Besides the kind of the cut that needs some stitches, the eyeball was really the problem. It had suffered some pretty major trauma. So I had this pressure building in my eyeball or behind the eyeball. I don't know exactly how that all works, but I lost sight in my eye. So I pretty frantic there for a while, thinking, man, this could impact a whole bunch of my life in one little event on a Sunday night. We're all freaked out. We're all really panicked in the moment. But really, when I look back at this event, it was the weeks after the event that were really the struggle. That night, they let me go home. Kathy drove me home, and they said, you need to come back to the hospital tomorrow morning. First thing, be there first thing, and we're going to have one of our eye doctors at the Rock View look you over. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. So I love that when they say, come first thing, because that, in my mind, that means I'm going to be in and out of there pretty quick. So sure enough, I get in there and they're, yeah, no, there's no in and out. Kathy's out in the, I told her, I said, oh, just hang out in the parking lot for a little bit. I think they're just going to squeak me. No. 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Kathy's calling me like, what are we, how are we doing here? I said, oh, I don't know. Like, there's a few people in here, but I think it should be any minute. And then half an hour drags by, and then an hour. I said, you know what? I don't know what's going on here. I went up there. She said, well, you know, we're going to try to squeeze you in, but you don't have an appointment. And I said, I don't. She said, no. So just hang tight. So I called Kathy right away. I said, you might as well go. I'll call you when this is done. So that day, I ended up waiting over about 3.5 hours in that thing, waiting for a spot, which was just not my expectation. I got miserable. Now, they had told me that the night before when I first came in, they said, look, you cannot look at your phones. You can't be looking at any electronic devices with your good eye. Creates too much stimulation. Stay away from it. So, of course, there I am in this waiting room. What the heck do you do with 3.5 hours? I mean, I'm just, shoot me right now, right? Just frustrated. They checked out my eye pressure. They said, whoa, things are not much better. More medication. They said, we want you back here tomorrow morning again. This happened 5 straight days in a row. Now, to boot, they said, look, you can't lay flat. You can't sleep flat on your back because that'll end up, the blood will go to your eye. That'll be a bad scene. So you got to sit upright. You got to sleep upright. I'm a stomach sleeper. Like, I know it's not good, but I can't sleep on my back for nothing. So there I am sitting in this lazy boy that's all reclined. You think I could sleep? Forget it. Tossing, turning. Want to turn on the TV? No, I'm not allowed to turn on the TV. I'm just like, oh, frick. I can't even look at my phone. Work's piling up. You know, after the first couple of days, I was just grateful they were telling me that likely my eyesight was going to return. I was just like, oh, yeah. You know what? Temporary. But boy, after the second or third day of this, things were getting a little testy. You know, I need to rely on my family. I wasn't allowed to drive. So it's like, I really should go out and get this done and this done. And Kat's like, well, I'm not going to be here. So you're going to have to wait. I'll be back around 2:30. My life was like literally being thrown into chaos. I could feel things kind of changing inside me. It wasn't like I was absolutely nasty. I wasn't belligerent. There was just this, what I would call this low-level angst. You know, I'd wake up in the morning and just in an instant, I'd be reminded, oh yeah, my eye. Oh yeah, I can't look at my phone. Oh yeah, barely slept last night. I'd just be reminded of, in a minute, of all the things that just weren't right. And it just starts eating away at kind of the brightness of life. You know what I mean? It's not high-level anxiety. It's just low-riding anxiety. It's distracting, irritating. It pulls me out of the moment. My boys are telling me about something funny, and I find myself struggling to pay attention, let alone enjoy something that they're enjoying. For me, I think as I look back, it was probably the lack of control that I had over my situation. I couldn't make the pressure behind my eye go down. I couldn't make the waiting line in the waiting room shorter. I couldn't control the doctor's schedules. I couldn't control my family's schedules who needed to drive me around. I couldn't make my mind relax and just let me sleep on my back. Everything was like, it just felt a little bit out of my domain. Couldn't make it. Mother Teresa, you've probably heard of her. She was a woman renowned for working with people who were in some of the hardest poverty-stricken areas of the world, an area called Calcutta in India. I mean, we don't know poverty like that. But it was interesting. She talked about times when she would travel to speak, often to raise money for the causes that she was behind. And she would notice of her time spent in the Western world, in the developed countries. She said, I've noticed something that's more insidious than the financial poverty of my own homeland. She called it a psychological poverty. Psychological poverty. She said, where it seems like people are stricken with this belief, this mindset, this way of looking at their world that just never is quite good enough. That's always missing something. Remember reading that, you know, this constant obsession with what isn't right, which we don't have. She said it was worse, she thought, than the blatant financial poverty that she wrestled with day in, day out with these people. Because she says, you know, you can see financial poverty. You can see it. You can see when people aren't hungry. You can feed that. But she said this psychological poverty, it's insidious because it lies. It lurks below the skin. You never know. It's there. It's like a demon that just torments people. They don't even know it. It's stealing life from them. This psychological poverty is so subtle, but it can convince us that the absence of suffering is truly conditional to our lives being a certain way. That this specific thing needs to work out, or that needs to happen, or this must never happen if I'm going to be okay. When I look around right now and I speak with people in this time that we find ourselves in, it's this low-level psychological poverty that I think is seeping in. It's how I would describe the emotional state of so many right now, without even them knowing it. Young adults confined to their home, they can't get out, they can't socialize. Impacting their dating life, their typical way of being, their hold up. This is a new experience. Some are feeling claustrophobic from the new restrictions. There's parents now that are having to go back to homeschooling, having to watch their kids 24/7. Just being caught in a small little bubble in their lives. Some, while that's going on, are distracted by the anxiety and stress of their career, not sure what they're going to have left. For some, it's just the incredible boredom right now, right? It's just, what do you do? There's only so many shows on Netflix, right? Like, there's, what now? Some are just have lost themselves in frantic doing to try to ward off this anxiety, this frustration, this low-level suffering. Some are just stagnating. I'm betting that those listening to me right now would probably find themselves somewhere in the midst of all those sad realities. You may not even really have thought much about it. Again, you don't have to be belligerent. You don't have to be freaking out to feel the low level and angst and suffering. What's often misunderstood about this kind of low level suffering is its subtle toxic nature. Like it doesn't just affect us, it has a way of just seeping in and paper cutting the people around us, nicking, taking the energy levels and just bringing it down, bringing it. It can act like lighter fluid on little misunderstandings. It can be the fuel of a little insult, a little accusation, a little assumption it's made. It can leave us with little empathy for others who are in a difficult spot. It makes us say, oh yeah? Have you heard my story? Oh yeah, you think that's bad? Because it's low level, though, it rarely has a big outburst, so it pervades. It becomes almost a normal way of being. It's often not what's said, it's often what isn't said. It has its sneaky tentacles. But it makes for some long days and some long nights. And when this low-level mental suffering lingers, it has a way of taking what could have been special moments, moments of lightness and laughter, special moments where there could be a celebration, and it mutes them. It can almost skip right past them. I've talked with people who have said they've had entire years of their lives go missing due to this low-level suffering because they just couldn't see any good in the midst of it. How many times have we heard, we want 2020 over? Really, what's said often underneath that, what is behind that is nothing of value has happened in this year. That is what low-level suffering does. It bounces right over the highlights, the moments, the special times of connection, the times when someone's done something meaningful or done something special and they need to be we just look right over to the thing that isn't quite right. My life could be so much better than it is right now. I don't know if I need that, but let me just pull that up. Probably not. Let me ask you something. Do you ever find yourself just kind of wishing away the moment and kind of looking into the future and hoping, kind of dreaming, going, oh, if only we could just get away right now. Oh, if only I didn't have my kids here, life would be so much better. If only that person would just stop being so annoying. Why do they have to chew like that? That is unbelievable. Someone give that person a mirror. This little low-level anxiety, suffering, it can take on the most subtle little ways of being just suffering. The littlest things all around us. That person, you could only learn how to drive. What is it with people? Man, if I could just make more money right now, if I didn't have a job that required this much of me, if only my kids could just do better in school. Oh, we hear all these little wishes. What kinds of things do you find yourself bothered by right now? What do you wish was different about your life? What's been occupying some negative space for you lately? Let me ask you something. What if I told you that you might never experience that? What if you never do fit in that pair of jeans you want to fit into? What if your husband never stops annoying you in that particular way? What if your health doesn't quite snap back the way you were hoping or told it would? Or you never get that vacation home, or that promotion gets handed off. Would your life be ruined? Would you be sentenced to a life where low-level suffering and misery would now have to be normal? There is an age-old practice that has been around for thousands of years that has alleviated a lot of this kind of suffering. I began reading about it a number of years ago, and at the time I went, that's so simple. And then I tried it, and I went, oh, that is ridiculously ninja level. I want to talk about it this morning. I want to throw you a bone. If any of this is resonating with you this morning, if you've got a rub, if you're developing a blister in some part of your life because the world isn't quite working, I got a little hack. It is practiced in Christianity, but it's not unique to Christianity. In fact, it's probably more Buddhist than anything. It's something that Jesus practiced regularly, and I think he challenged his followers to do likewise. But it's not a lightweight exercise. There are many who, like me, dismiss it quickly, almost saying it might be almost be impossible, or there's reasons why you shouldn't be able to do this. But I can assure you, it isn't impossible. It's a beautiful antidote to this low-level suffering. I want to talk about simply the choice to stop suffering. How's that? Just choose not to. We're done. It's been nice. Glad you're here. I know I'll piss someone off just saying that because they're going, you don't know. Yeah. This choice, it centers really just around a question. Do you want to suffer? Or do you not want to suffer? Now give me a moment as I unpack this. Most of us don't give ourselves the choice or think it is a choice. I've talked to some who say, of course I don't want to suffer, but I was laid off. My wife and I haven't been getting along. I'm working 3 times harder than I was before, and I'm making less money. I have been struggling for years to lose weight, and it ain't happening. I do not like my body. I'm not going to be able to see my parents this Christmas. My investments are really hurting right now, like bad. Then I'll leave a line there, because I've had that line filled out 100 different ways. And that's just me personally. Reasons why I must continue to experience low-level suffering. For me, this accident recovery, during it, I said to myself, I would be doing a lot better if I could sleep better. If I didn't have to rely on my family, and or if I could be assured that I'd have a ride, or if I could only be there for about an hour, I would be fine. But after an hour, come on. But see, that's not the question about this whole thing. The question isn't, well, what do you need? No, no, the question is, do you want to suffer? And if you're able to keep it that simple, you'll see that it really is under your control. It's just that we have this deeply entrenched set of preferences that get in the way. Conditions that we lay out and say, as long as this condition isn't met, it's not going to go well. So I'm in the middle of this pity party. It's about day four now. And my family would just want to be out of the house, right? And I disobeyed the doctor's orders and I began scrolling on my phone through social media feeds. And I stumble across Sylvia Haynes. I don't know if you remember Sylvia Haynes. Sylvia and Doug are part of our community. Sylvia, Vince interviewed her on stage. She suffers from something known as Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome. It's when you have a limb that begins growing too much bone or tissue, soft tissue. She's had it since she was born. I'm scrolling through Instagram and I see a post by her. She's in the hospital again. She had only been in the church not long before that and telling her story and all that she had been going through. And now she's back in with another infection in her leg. And she had a picture of her son. She was so excited. Her little boy would come and read a bedtime story with her before Doug would take their child home and she'd end up spending the night. She was there for quite a few days trying to get the infection under control. This was a way of life for Sylvia. This was like another day at the office. So I'm just reading, and I read her post, seeing what she was going through. And it was just like, instantly, my self-pity just like evaporated. Like it was like, holy crap, look at what she's doing. I was in there for like 3 hours. She's in there for like days. Now, hey, this happens all the time. We see suffering people all the time. What happened to me in that moment, though? I was just like, well, I don't got it that bad. Now, instantly, I was reminded of this practice, this Buddhist practice. They call it practice of unconditional happiness. But it's just basically asking, do you want to be happy or not? Do you want to suffer or not? I was reminded of it, and I just went, you know what? Actually, yeah, you're right. I don't want to suffer. So I began, just in that moment, began using some of these principles. I began thinking about my conditions that I've laid out for my happiness. I need a better sleep. Then I began thinking about that. Really? You got a condition for 2 weeks, Jeff. Chances are you're going to fully recover. You're going to be back on. You're going to be sleeping in your own bed in 2 weeks. So you're going to go a few nights of test sleep. Really? I was like, yeah, no, that's probably not a good enough reason to be pissed. And I got a personal driver. Yes, you might have to wait an hour before Kathy can swing around and grab you. You got a personal driver. Stop. In all my lifetime, I think I've probably spent 20 hours maybe in waiting rooms. And probably 90% of those hours were spent for my boys, not even for me. And shortly, it might be years before I'm back in that hospital again. So in a matter of moments, I began identifying some of the objections I put up, some of the conditions. I said, this should be different. This should be different. This is not right. This is not right. If this gets right, I'm okay. This gets right, I'm okay. I just went, no, lift in those conditions. Now, I talk like I'm some kind of hero. It lasted like 15 minutes. But it was like I had pulled up all the blinds on the house. Sun was shining in. I was just like, woo, I'm okay. Really, I'm okay. It's crazy how in 1 minute of reading Sylvia's story, I could consider what I would consider incredible hardship. It just began to just turn down the low level suffering, like just. All of a sudden, I find myself talking with Kathy on the phone. Hey, how are you doing? Things, my tone was different. She's like, what's the matter? I'm like, I'm okay. Hey, I'm just calling. She's like, what do you need now? I'm like, no, I'm just calling to see how you're doing. She didn't recognize who I was on the other end of the phone. In the moment as I began practicing this, I was amazed just how bearable temporary affliction can be. I realized how much of my suffering is actually truly optional. Now, like I said, I wish I could have made that last hour after hour, day after day. This requires incredible ninja-like mindfulness because you can slip right into it again so easily. But if you look at the Sylvias of the world, this is what I have come to realize. There are so many people around me that continue to blow my mind because the level of hardship that they're facing makes anything that I'm experiencing absolutely pale in comparison. Like, I'm almost embarrassed bringing this little thing up because I know there's some people that are going, that threw you off? I'm looking at Jerry here with lung transplants. Like, the kind of suffering that I'm looking around in our community knowing exists. And yet, you know what I've learned about some of these people? Is how, in the midst of their hardship, they've done this. They become ninjas at this. They have learned how much of their suffering is truly optional. That's why you can see some people that are in some of the worst, darkest places. And the gratitude pouring out of them. Their laughter and joy. And you just go, how the heck? The process of lifting conditions is a powerful perspective shifter. It can transport us out of the hurt locker that we think we're in. Put us in such a bright space. It allows us to hear people again. To all of a sudden have a new capacity for empathy. People start talking and there you are. Ready to celebrate a moment. Ready to lend a hand, ready to lift. Rather than inflict some kind of suffering or projecting it onto someone else. The toxic nature of this thing just starts drying up. I like to think the salt, the flavor that Jesus spoke of in the Sermon on the Mount becomes all of a sudden evident in our lives. People go, wow, you are a beautiful person to be around. I don't know what it is, but I feel so good being around you. That's what happens when the shift happens. Let me ask you something. I'm going to invite Alessandra to come up here. The message is simple. But it's not obvious. When practicality, when the application goes to happen. Because oftentimes we don't see where the low-level anxiety sits, where the suffering really is. So while she's playing, I just want to ask you some questions, and I hope you could just take an inventory to find the rub, to find the part in your life that you have chosen to suffer for. Let me ask you a question. How would you rate your level of contentment right now? Scale of 1 to 10, contentment. That's tricky, isn't it? How many moments of happiness have you experienced over the last week? You can look at it and go, man, I was smiling there. Well, that felt good. Think about the things that you've wanted to laugh about, things that brought you joy. How much gratitude have you expressed in the past week? How many times have you found yourself stopping and just saying, thank you, or this is so great? How many times have you found yourself saying, man, I'm lucky. I feel fortunate for this or that. What has been your level of irritability lately? How have your patience levels been? How much empathy have you felt for the people around you who may be in a more difficult place? How much of your conversations are complaint-based? Like, how much have you found yourself fixating on something that you don't feel is quite right, like the weather or the roads? How many times have you found yourself just frustrated by having to wear a mask, saying something? Talking about Trudeau's policies. Kenny, where has he been? Oil and gas, COVID restrictions, economy. How many things just gravitate to your lips? Allow you to be bothered. If you're scoring poorly this morning, there might be a few conditions that need to be lifted. So what are your conditions? What future outcomes have you decided you really need? Like, you really need this in order to be okay. What's stressing you out? What is it that you're trying hard to control that isn't cooperating? Is it something about your body? Maybe it has nothing to do with the world out there. Maybe it's something internal. Maybe it's something about your career. Maybe it's a relationship that just is not quite working out. Something you need from your kids or your partner. Maybe it's a pleasure. Maybe right now you're just wanting to feel good and you're going, man, I want that trip. I want more sex. I want to purchase something. I want to buy something. These are all wonderful things, folks. Not a thing wrong with any of them. But what if they don't happen? Could you be okay? This is what I'm inviting you today to do. Choose what suffering you want this week. Look over the things that are causing you suffering and decide, man, is that big enough? Is it worth it? Because some suffering, a lot of suffering, is optional. When these moments of annoyance and an irritation pop up, ask yourself, is this worth suffering over right now? Or can I let it ride? May we be a people who transcend these difficult moments and seasons we're in. May we be a people who's able to look past a lot of the stuff and say, that is not going to steal my day, my moment. May we be brought back into this present moment, not let the fears of the unknown of the future choke it out. The resentment or the frustration of how the past has played out. May we not let either of those steal our moment right now to just be here, be alive, Oh, what a story to come out of 2020 with big smiles on her face going, come on, is that all you got? Come on. It's my determination today. You need to do better than that, 2020. Because there's some moments to be enjoyed right now in your own life, with your family, with your close friends, in your own personal world. May you not miss them this week. May you not let that low-level frustration and suffering steal the moment. It's not worth it. So like I said, simple, but not simple, right? Simple, but not easy. Choose your suffering carefully this week. May you go in peace. May you bring joy wherever you go. It's my prayer for you. Amen.